101. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest for this week's Coffeehouse Conversation is Holly Brooks, who is an amazing skier, one of the best in the country, competitive in the world, and also the hero of all athletes who weren't great when they started, because she's somebody who was pretty much done with competitive skiing, became a coach, and then became an Olympic skier. Just sort of amazing story that it's very, very inspiring.
Thanks. Yeah, it's definitely a very non-traditional approach, but one that I've grown accustomed to, and it's been a lot
of
fun.
It's worked for you, huh?
I've had a lot of really fun adventures in life because of it.
Yeah. Well, I was just, you know, and your blog is great. If people don't want to Google Holly Brooks, but it's where it talks about in high school and as a younger skier, you really weren't one of the top skiers at all. You were sort of a back half of the pack person.
Yeah, I was always kind of middle of the pack, towards the back. But the thing is, I loved being out there. I loved doing it. I wasn't winning races. I wasn't getting medals or anything like that. But the passion was there, and I grew up skiing with my family. A lot of my friends growing up skied as well, and we got to go to all these really awesome summer training camps, and we just had a blast.
And so, even though it was just something you loved, it wasn't you weren't worried about being the very best.
No, I mean, of course.
You always like to be a little bit better, but you're racing against that guy who's right ahead of you, right?
Exactly.
You're not racing against the person in the front.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes you're racing against yourself too. You're trying to improve your own performance as well.
So I want to go through that whole story because it was really a good one, but I also wanted you to tell us just about some of your recent accomplishments, because I know you've had an amazing year. You've been skiing overseas all winter long.
Yeah.
And just tell us about some of the great events that have happened.
Well, this last winter was a real road trip, to say the least. this is a non-Olympic year and a non-world championship year, and so that means there wasn't one huge target. There wasn't a huge goal.
So you're not trying to just qualify for the Olympics and get there. You're trying to just win as many races as you can.
Or be competitive in as many races as possible. And so last year I won the domestic race series called the U.S. Super Tour. And that gave me World Cup start rights for November and December. And so I flew over. I left perfect skiing in Alaska in November.
What a year to miss skiing in Anchorage, right?
I know. I was pretty bummed about that. But in November I left perfect skiing and I flew to Sweden to ski in a refrigerated tunnel.
Oh my God.
And pretty much all of Europe had no snow. And so,
they built a facility like that? Just for cross-country skiing?
Exactly. Yeah. Amazing. They have them in Sweden. They have a couple in Germany. And what it looks like is it looks like a big tremor, if you've ever seen that horror movie. It's it's old. But it's a refrigerated tunnel. It's about a kilometer and a half long. Part of it is built into a hill. And, you know, it's perfectly, it could be 75 degrees outside. But it's pretty much like stepping into a refrigerator. And so we went over to Europe and we skied for the first couple days in the ski tunnel to get ready for the opening World Cup races in Norway. So then we did that.
So what are some of your best results this year?
You know, a lot of my races were overseas this year, whereas in the past I've done a lot of domestic races. We had some really groundbreaking races as a team. The women's relay team had a sprint for fourth place in the Czech Republic. And if we threw one of the second Norwegian team out, which would happen in the Olympics or World Championships, only one team per country, that would have been the sprint for the bronze medal. And so that, I would say, is one of my best memories and, you know, biggest accomplishments of the season. Is the relay in the Czech Republic.
And that's something new for U.S. skiing, to even be close to the podium.
Yeah.
Right? And now, like, stuff is really happening.
Yeah, and you know, that day was really special. None of us were feeling up to snuff. We had had the stomach flu go around our whole team. The day before, I had actually dropped out of a race, which I never do. And so we were all pretty on edge, and we really pulled together and had a great performance. Keegan was actually sick that day, and so we were even missing our best skier. And we went in, and if that had been the Olympics, it would have been a sprint for the bronze medal. And the U.S. as a team in a team event has never been in that position before. So we were ecstatic about the performance. And we're really excited for next year's World Championships, and then of course the Olympics in Sochi.
Yeah, and how many of those skiers on that relay team are from Anchorage? You and Keegan?
Well, on that relay team, I was the only one Anchorage. But in Europe, altogether, there were 6 girls and 3 are from Anchorage. Myself, mm-hmm. Keegan, and Sadie Bjornsson.
Yeah.
And we all ski for APU as well from the same club.
Which is unbelievable, right?
Yeah. We have like half of the female strength located right here in Alaska.
And you just recently won a huge cheese. I saw this. You won a race in Switzerland?
It was in Italy.
In Italy, okay.
Yep, it was in Toblach Dobbiaco, Italy. Uh-huh. And it was a 3-day stage race. And I had some good performances every day, but it was a tour. And the first day, I won a huge circle of cheese. The second day, I won 10 pounds of speck, which is basically European bacon. I won 10 pounds of bacon. And then the final day, I won 12 pounds of local cheese. And I was really disappointed because I couldn't bring it home.
If only you were running a delicatessen. But
I know.
Well, and you couldn't bring it home because you know, the customs and the duties and carry on and everything else.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I wasn't sure how that would work. And mm-hmm. It didn't go to waste, though, because we had a wonderful waiter who had been treating us very kindly all week. And so I gave it to him as a gift, and he was pretty ecstatic.
It just sounds like an amazing sort of dream come true lifestyle to mm-hmm. be traveling from city to city in Europe. Participating. I mean, you love skiing, so you're skiing all the time. You're with these great, exciting people, and you're a star over there. I mean, you're part of something really big.
Yeah.
I mean, is that how it feels, or does it get old at all, or?
You know, I think I was over there for 5 months with one small break, mm-hmm. and it's definitely a huge change in lifestyle. Some of it is very, you know, it sounds very glamorous, mm-hmm. and some of it is. It's wonderful. You know, I'm getting to see the Dolomites in Italy, mm-hmm. and this year I went to Russia for the first time on a charter jet, which isn't nearly as nice as it sounds either, but, you know, we landed at a military base. I went to the Czech Republic for the first time, and Slovenia, and so I'm getting to go to a lot of really amazing places, which is wonderful. But there is a little bit of downtime. There's a lot of homesickness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of food that is really unappetizing that's involved as well. And so it's wonderful, but it's not without hardship too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of really difficult travel.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 10, 11 or 12 hour time difference from Alaska. And so traveling over there from my door to wherever I'm going, I think it took me 25 or 30 hours of travel to get there. And mm-hmm. then you have to, you know, get used to the 10-hour time change. Yeah. And it can be really difficult.
And who's paying for all this? I mean, you're not getting rich doing this, obviously.
No. unfortunately, I'm fairly self-funded. Mm-hmm. And so really the ball fell into my lap to raise some money. And
5 months in Europe, I can't even imagine how much it costs.
Yeah, the 5 months in all was about $25,000. Mm-hmm. I had some great corporate sponsors step up. Mm-hmm. And so that was wonderful, the Rainier Clinic mm-hmm. and Carlisle Transport. Mm-hmm. And so that was wonderful. And then I had a series of local fundraisers, and some people donated money through my website. I thought I was going to come home December 17th, and I was skiing really well, and so there was an extended invitation for me to stay. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had a plane ticket to come home from Slovenia, Ljubljana, Slovenia, mm-hmm. and I just didn't get on the plane. you know, they said, hey, here's this opportunity, and the opportunity was actually to participate in this thing called the Tour de Ski. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners and viewers have heard of the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. And so this is basically the cross-country skiing version mm-hmm. of the Tour de France. And it's 9 races in 11 days.
Brutal.
In 3 countries. And so I had skied well enough mm-hmm. in November and December that they said, hey, you know, Holly, why don't you come over and participate in the Tour de Ski? So I didn't get on the plane in Ljubljana, and I just stayed over there. So that's for Christmas and and everything.
That's kind of tough, yeah. I've seen pictures of this event. There's one where it's in a mountainous, some old town in a mountain, and they've actually built a ski trail that goes through the streets, and there's thousands of people on the sides of the trail.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different sport over there, isn't it?
It is. You know, the skiers from Europe, especially the Norwegians, are stars. They're in the tabloids. You know, they have people knocking, you know, on their door for interviews all hours of the day. A lot of the teams have private jets, and so
it's amazing.
The U.S. team,
and you're there just eating rice and beans so you could stretch your money out, right?
Exactly. Wow. And so, you know, that said, it's really amazing, you know, the accomplishments that we've had compared to the big budgets of some of the other teams.
Must be getting some
teams.
Attention, yeah.
So, and you know, the U.S. girls especially turned a lot of heads this year. People are saying, oh, what are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, and some of the other
especially
coaches.
APU.
Yeah.
This little tiny college with a couple hundred kids off in Alaska.
Exactly.
Producing the best skiers ever in America. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, some of the head coaches from other countries have been contacting Eric Flora, my coach at APU, saying, what are you doing? Why are your girls skiing so fast? Like, tell us your secrets. So that's really satisfying.
Yeah. Well, tell me about what it's like going to the Olympics. I mean, every kid's dream is to be on the U.S. Olympic team. And you qualified sort of at the last minute. You didn't know you were going to get to go. You went. But then you maybe peaked early because you were trying to qualify, right? And so your skiing, were you disappointed with your skiing? Or was it just such a great experience you felt fantastic about it just being there?
Yeah. You know, I think the whole experience was really so satisfying that results aside, I really had to be satisfied with the whole thing. No one expected me to make it. I didn't even really decide to make a run for it until July of 2009, which was a couple months before the tryouts started. And so it's easy to say, oh, I really wish that I could have done better. I'm not happy with my results. But, you know, it's slightly rare to go from being a coach and not even on anyone's radar, not even racing the races, to jumping in the races and somehow qualifying. And so
it's a story that's got to be almost unique in all of sports. And so I want to talk about that, because that's something that I just think is such a great story. So I'm with Holly Brooks. The show is One-on-One. My name's Charles Woolforth. And Holly is fresh back from her amazing ski season in Europe, competing in all of these international events. And yet, I want to say what was not once like me, because I'm sure you're never as bad a skier as me, but was once like one of those who was not ever expected to reach that kind of attainment.
Yeah.
Although you're virtually born on skis, right? Your parents were ski teachers, and you were, what's the youngest you ever taught somebody to start skiing?
You know, I think I was a ski instructor at age 10 or something like that. My jacket went down to my knees, and I was helping, you know, the 6 and 7 year olds learn how to ski.
Yeah. And so then when you graduated, you skied in college, but again, we're not necessarily a total standout. And then you got the job coaching at APU after that?
No, actually, I graduated from Whitman College in 2004. And I decided, I grew up in Seattle, and so no one skied. Everyone thought I was weird.
It's too far to go, right?
They didn't know what roller skiing was. And so I had this goal of going to a place where skiing was in the community. I wanted to ski out my front door. I really wanted to have friends that were skiers. And so I came up the winter of 2004, and I actually got my first official coaching job, coaching for West High School.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I went from this girl skiing by herself in Seattle to coaching a group of 100 kids.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. I mean, we had everything from exchange students who had never seen snow, let alone put skis on their feet, to junior national champions. And it was an amazing, amazing experience.
including my son, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I actually was the head coach at West for 3 years, and just really fell in love with coaching. Really like high school students, and it was just an absolute ball. You know, we had spaghetti feeds and parties every Friday night before the races, and I was just so happy to be a part of it, and also slightly jealous that I, you know, didn't have that growing up. But
yeah,
it was
that
fantastic.
Kind of scene, right.
Yeah.
And that's when you got into coaching at APU, or how did that?
So, and then coaching at West, I also did a little bit of club coaching, and I coached for 5 years at Junior Olympics, which is something that the top Alaskan skiers can qualify for. And coaching at Junior Olympics is when I met Eric Flora, who's the head coach and program director at APU. And so we were put on some kind of task at Junior Olympics, you know, picking the kick wax for the kids or something like that. And we actually became pretty good friends. And little did I know, he was kind of looking and hoping to hire someone. And then it all kind of fell into place. At the time, I was working as an environmental scientist at a consulting firm downtown. And I really liked my job. I had no intention of leaving it. And Eric Flora came to me with a full-time offer at APU. And I thought about it for, you know, 5-10 minutes and thought, you know, I can't turn this down.
You got a job skiing, right?
I got a job skiing. And so I think that was in 2006.
And not very long ago.
Not that long ago. And then, you know, that was in 2006. The Olympics were in 2010. And all that time in between, I coached and I was working all the time. And
but
you
were not thinking, I got to get to the Olympics. You were thinking, I got to get these masters to be able to
I have to coach these juniors, I have to help these masters, and then on the weekends I have to keep up with my husband who's crazy. And, and so little did I know, those years and years of coaching and time on snow, it was actually training. It was it was putting in the hours and the time on skis and on snow that I needed to, you know, participate, you know, in the Olympics.
Now this is what I find part of one of the things I find amazing about your story is because, so I do the APU program a couple of days a week, you know, and I'm there with Dylan Watts,
are
and he's,
you?
And he's awesome, you know. But I think, man, he is going so slow for, you know, I'm skiing my fastest and he's barely warming up. How could he possibly be getting the kind of workout like that you were getting that was leading you to the Olympics? I mean, I would think you're skiing with juniors, they're not. I mean, they're in masters, they're at a much lower level than you are. So how does that add up to what it added up to?
Yeah, well, if you look at any professional athlete's training, there's something called base training. And it's just, it's the training that's slow and long. And if you think of a pyramid, it's the bottom of the pyramid. And so even though you're not skiing fast, it's still time on snow. You're perfecting your balance, you're getting coordination. You're getting a little bit of a workout. And you know, maybe I'm skiing with, you know, a little bit slower with people that I'm coaching, but then I'll sprint from one person to the next person to try to coach them. You know, and then my coaching style was very hands-on. And so instead of standing on the side of the trail, I would just ski loops and try to ski with as many people as possible. Or with the juniors doing intervals, I'd say, okay, follow me, try this. And then I'd follow them. Okay, you're doing this. You know, change this up a little bit. And so it really adds up to a lot of skiing. And even though it isn't all fast, you get your base training and then you do a little bit of your faster skiing in addition. And it it creates.
So you're skiing basically all day long.
Yeah.
It's a full work day of skiing.
Yeah.
And plus
kind of,
whatever
yeah.
else you're going to do.
Yeah.
And as a college student, you'd never be able to do that because you've got more other things going on in your life.
Exactly. And so as a coach, you know, I was on snow maybe 30 hours a week and then in the office, you know, however many hours a week and then doing my other stuff on top of that. And, you know, I didn't have school at the time to kind of take some of that time away. And sometimes so, after the sessions, I would ski for myself. And so it just it really adds up.
So then you're in the Tour of Anchorage, and you win it.
Yeah.
Was that a surprise when you found yourself at the end of the race and you're the winner that first time?
Yeah, it was a huge surprise for me. You know, the Tour of Anchorage is a great race, and there were some other really good skiers, skiers that were that were on the APU elite mm-hmm. team, and I had just never raced them. You know, mm-hmm. I was coaching, so I didn't get to go to the elite training sessions. Right. And so I had no idea where I fell into that mm-hmm. or how I compared, and was able to enter the race and win that, and it was so much fun. And it kind of started me thinking a little bit.
Yeah. And then you go to the Birkebeiner, which tell people what that is. That's even bigger than the Tour of Anchorage.
Yeah. So the American Birkebeiner is, it originated in Norway. There's the Norwegian Birkebeiner. But the American Birkebeiner is the largest ski race in the U.S. The main race is 50 kilometers, kind of like the Tour. Mm-hmm. And there's something like close to 10,000 people that do it.
Wow.
And I entered that race kind of on a whim, went with a bunch of friends, and I came in second by an inch.
Right, and then people started thinking, hey, Holly has really been doing something, you know?
Yeah.
People were talking about you as being, but you still were sort of holding back and thinking, no, I'm not an Olympic skier, until that Mount Marathon race.
Yeah.
And this is something that blew my mind. Like, I pick up the newspaper and I say, okay, Holly Brooks was on the verge of winning the Mount Marathon race when she collapses on the street and is unconscious, is taken to the hospital.
Yeah.
And then she gets out of her hospital bed, goes back and finishes the race. And I think, it turned out that you'd run so hard that you'd actually damaged your muscles. And I thought, man, that's hard. I mean, that lady did not give up.
Yeah.
But there was something about that race that made you realize that you were wanting to be an Olympic skier.
Yeah, it's a really, I guess, awkward time to have that realization come into your mind. I was in the emergency room, laying down, and I had IVs in both arms with bags, and I was all dirty, covered in mud, and I think there was some blood because they had a hard time starting the IV because I was so dehydrated.
You used up everything. Yeah.
And I just remember having this overwhelming sensation. It was like adrenaline and euphoria and desire and goals kind of all crashing together. Mm-hmm. It was like, I can do this, I want to do this, I want to go to the Olympics. And so it was a very, very awkward time to have that realization.
Right.
But that's kind of when it happened. And so that was obviously July 4th, 2009. And then I damaged my muscles to the extent that I pretty much had to take the next 2 months off.
Yeah, but I want to get in here that your husband, Rob Whitney, was also a skier who was just on the verge of making the Olympics twice and just barely didn't make it. And he was, what kind of encouragement did he give you?
Rob has been huge through all of this. He actually planted the seed in my mind to begin with. Growing up as a girl from Seattle, getting 45th place at Junior Olympics, of course, I always thought about the Olympics, but I never thought that I could go. Mm-hmm. And through all of the coaching, and then through our weekend adventures, I used to say I ski for work and I ski for fun. You know, work is my passion is my life. And the whole time he was telling me, I think you could do this. You could go to the Olympics. You could make this team. And I just totally wrote him off because I didn't really have the results. I didn't have the results at all to back it up. Mm-hmm. So he really planted the seed. He was really encouraging me to enter the first few races that I did. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really personal experience for both of us together because he was so close twice and it all came together. And so
in a marriage, I could see that going two ways, right?
Yeah.
But it's been positive.
It has. And he's been incredibly supportive. And, I would be lying to say if he isn't living vicariously through me a little bit. But I think he can really take credit for a lot of my success and the fact that I went to Vancouver.
It's got to be difficult, though, being apart, the amount of time that you're apart, months and months on end.
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
Yeah. It's really difficult. And, we have lots of bad internet connections. Mm-hmm. I don't even have a phone that works in Europe, and it's really difficult. That combined with a 10-hour time change makes it so that we really aren't able to talk very often. And when we got married, actually a week after Mount Marathon, and and so I could hardly walk down the aisle. I had to get someone to help put my, my heels on.
Oh my God.
And you know, when we got married, I don't think that he was expecting to be married, but spend a lot of time kind of living as a bachelor,
yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I got home after this winter, the fridge was dirty and empty, so.
But he's got to stick with it at least through Sochi, right?
Oh yeah, oh
do,
yeah.
Are you, you, I mean, how do we, when do we find out if you're going to be there?
Well, you know, the qualification period will be the first couple months before the games. The games will be in February, so mm-hmm. I'll probably choose the final team January of 2014. But the training for that is yesterday, today, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's the thing with being a cross-country skier, the work never ends. And luckily, I like the work.
Well, yeah. Good luck. I know everybody in Anchorage is going to be rooting for you and
thank you.
Supporting you and just like thinking that you're vicariously skiing for all of us. So.
Thank you. Yeah.
Now, this has been great. I've been talking with Holly Brooks, our own Olympic skier from Anchorage. She's not exactly as old as some of us, but the champion for all older athletes, for our future. It's been One-on-One. My name is Charles Woolforth. Join us again next week for another Coffee House Conversation.
Cheers.
One-on-One is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. John LaFournaise directs and edits the show. Pat Yak is the producer. Camera operators are Travis Gilmore and Josh Edge. One-on-One is recorded at Kaladi Brothers Cafe at JL Tower. You can watch One-on-One Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on KAKM Channel 7 TV, or listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage. Tune in next week for One-on-One when Charles Woolforth interviews playwright Shotzi Schaefers. This is KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.